We're looking at the flood of litigation in this election year, voter intimidation concerns and alleged attempts to suppress votes. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Thanks for being here. A record-setting number of election-related lawsuits have been filed so far this year. The pandemic forced states to change voting procedures, and an unprecedented number of Americans and Wisconsinites we saw vote by mail. Federal judge yesterday ordered postal inspectors to do sweeps of mail processing facilities in some battleground states to ensure that, quote, no ballots were left behind. That order was denied late in the day. Were there any issues at your polling site? Were you able to cast your ballot without incident? Did you observe someone else running into barriers? We're at 800-642-1234. John Greenbaum is chief counsel and senior deputy director for the Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights Under Law. John, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you, Kate. Good morning.
Good morning. Tell us how you think this election went yesterday.
Well, I'd say, first of all, we had unprecedented turnout for this election, which was fantastic. The estimates I've seen say that maybe 155 million people will have voted. And I think the record before that was 137 million.
Wow.
So that's a good place to start from.
But as you watched elections play out around the country, what are some of the key takeaways that you had besides just a historic number of voters casting a ballot?
Well, a few things. I think one thing was what we saw in a lot of states was, in part, a reaction to the pandemic, but making more opportunities available for people to vote. Expanded mail-in voting, early in-person voting, in addition to voting on Election Day. And I think that and a lot of interest in this election had a positive effect on turnout. As you mentioned before, this year has had an unprecedented amount of litigation related to elections. My organization was involved in quite a lot of that. And then we had a lot of calls into a hotline that we run as part of a nonpartisan voter protection effort, where we've been getting calls for months, people asking questions about how to vote, but also people raising issues as well.
And that is the 666 Our Vote, the National Election Protection Hotline.
Yes, it is.
When you see the president declaring victory prematurely and saying that the election is a fraud on the American public, what do you make of that?
Well, I think that's really contrary to democracy. As you know, that there are in a lot of places, not all the ballots have been counted yet for various reasons. A lot of states, you can count mail-in ballots after Election Day as long as they're received or put in some states, it's received by Election Day. In other states, it's postmarked by Election Day. And in some places, it takes time for the election officials to actually count all the ballots. I mean, we're not going to have a final count for a good couple of weeks. So casting aspersions on the election was an inappropriate thing for the president to do, and is really contrary to our democratic system where we want people's votes to count.
We're talking with John Greenbaum, who's a lawyer working on voting access. His group, Lawyers Committee, runs, as we've been talking about, the National Election Protection Hotline, 666 Our Vote. You can join in with your insights on what you saw at the polls on Election Day, how it played out for you at 800-642-1234. John, why do you think we are seeing this flood of litigation, especially at the state court level, in this election cycle, in this year?
Well, because voting matters. Voting matters for a lot of reasons. It's first of all, it's the right, the Supreme Court has said, it's the fundamental right that's preservative of all of our other rights, that it's our ability as citizens to have a voice in the government. And so for groups like ours, it's important to have rules that allow people access to the ballot and don't put a lot of unreasonable restrictions. I think for the political parties, their aim is different. They both want their candidates to win. And so they're going to want rules that they think favor their party winning the election.
As you mentioned, you know, there were an estimated 100 million people around the country who voted early in this election. Are you seeing any irregularities or any of those ballots being thrown out or challenged?
Well, at this point, not a lot of that. Mm-hmm. This was one of the concerns that I had coming into the election, was that there would be mass challenges of some of the mail-in ballots. It's really difficult to challenge early voting where somebody shows up at the polling place in person. I thought there would be more challenges to mail-in ballots than there's been. I mean, it's still possible that in a couple states where they're doing the counting and where there are some issues regarding the rules for mail-in ballots, that you might see some litigation. But and, you know, having as many people vote as early as we had in this election, I think, did a couple of things. One is it put a lot less stress on the system on Election Day, that there were definitely some election administration problems yesterday, but a lot fewer than what we're used to. And I think a lot of it had to do with the fact that you had more people voting before Election Day or voting by mail, and you had fewer people at the polls. So it's less stress on the system. I think it also made it more difficult to have large-scale, effective techniques designed at interfering or intimidating voters, because the voting process was spread out over a longer period of time. It makes it much more difficult to have a really organized effort that's designed to suppress the vote.
One of the things we were keeping an eye on yesterday was the federal judge who ordered a sweep of 12 postal districts after learning that, you know, 300,000 ballots the Postal Service had received had not been scanned or for delivery. And the USPS missed that deadline or declined to do that sweep. Is that something you're keeping an eye on?
Definitely. We brought one of the Postal Service cases, not the particular one where the judge issued the order. Obviously, with the combination of more people voting by mail, issues that the Postal Service was having, the pandemic, and some of the concerns about changes that were made in Postal Service delivery, this was a significant concern of ours going into the election. And even with all that judicial oversight, there were some issues in the end.
We are discussing the aftermath of Election Day at polling sites around the country. John Greenbaum is chief counsel for the Nonpartisan Lawyers Committee that's worked on equal justice issues since 1963. What do you think of the election litigation in our state courts all the way up to the U.S. Supreme Court? What voting rights protections do you think are at risk? Would you describe Tuesday as a free and fair election in our country? As votes are still being counted, how do you feel about President Trump falsely claiming victory early? Join in at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Back in a minute with John Greenbaum here on the Ideas Network. You're with us for the morning show on this morning after Election Day. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Let's get back to our conversation with John Greenbaum, senior counsel at the Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights Under Law. His group filed a voter intimidation lawsuit this week with the ACLU, the American Civil Liberties Union, against police in Graham, North Carolina. Law enforcement pepper sprayed a Get Out the Vote march last Friday, and so they're representing the marchers' organizer and activist in the suit. This election cycle, it was bombarded by allegations of voter fraud and intimidation. What did you see and experience on the ground? Be part of this at 800-642-1234. John Greenbaum from the Lawyers Committee stays with us for 10 more minutes. John, the Wisconsin Elections Commission held multiple press briefings throughout the day and night yesterday, and spokesperson Reed Magny told WPR last night that there were no major disruptive issues here.
There were a lot of people who were very concerned about, is there going to be conflict at polling places? And there really wasn't.
So there really wasn't any conflict at polling places. Were there any issues that arose at in-person polling sites in other swing states?
There was some of that, particularly a lot of it was towards the end of the day. We saw some of it in Pennsylvania, Ohio, Texas, and Florida. Were four states that come to mind, particularly in terms of there being some effort to try to discourage people from voting. Whether it was, in open carry states, somebody brandishing a gun near a polling place and walking around, there were some instances of cars making it difficult for people to get in the parking lot to park. So there were efforts here and there. What we didn't see, and one of the things that we were really concerned about coming into the election, is that there would be an effort either by a political party or the federal government, an organized effort that was going to make it difficult for people to vote.
And you didn't see that.
We didn't see that. There certainly were issues. The issues were more sporadic. One of the things we're going to be looking at after the election was there any coordination between some of the groups of people that we saw? But it wasn't a organized effort, like I said, from a political party or from a governmental entity or anything like that.
We're talking with attorney John Greenbaum, who's with the Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights Under Law. We're discussing the aftermath of Election Day, access to the polls. Let's take a call now. Rosa is joining us from Waterford this morning after. Hi, Rosa.
Good morning. So it's interesting. I did listen to President Trump's speech, and around 1:30 in the morning, President Trump was over 130,000 votes ahead in Wisconsin at 1:30 in the morning. And the fact that he had won Florida, I'm assuming he felt good, large, great margins in Pennsylvania. So that being said, it did not come across where he was 100%. He did mention that the election counting has been officially stopped, but didn't stop in Wisconsin. Because when I woke up at 4 in the morning, all of a sudden, Biden's ahead and Trump's behind by 10,000 points in the matter of 3 hours. He had a lead of 130,000 votes at 1:30 in the morning, and at 4 in the morning, he lost all that margin, and he's behind 10,000 points.
So, Rosa, do you feel like you can exercise patience in this process to work through the tallying of the votes and make sure to hold back until everything is counted?
Well, of course. But, there's a difference between absentee ballots and mail-in ballots. There is a difference. This is the first year ever I received mail-in ballots. And I go, I didn't request these. What's this? President Trump has always said absentee ballots are that you requested it, you get it, you mail it back. Whereas mail-in ballots, how do I know if, here's my question I have yet to get answered. If someone gets a mail-in ballot, they fill it out, mail it back. can they still go and vote in person as well? Will those two votes be cross-referenced and checked?
And I want to have John jump in here. Rosa, you know, feeling distrust of the absentee voting system, John.
So, Rosa, the election officials come up with ways to make sure that people do not double vote. So if you were sent a ballot in the mail, you can't just go to a polling place and vote another ballot. What you would have to do, for example, in many states, is if you wanted to go in person and vote, instead of using that mail-in ballot, you'd have to bring that mail-in ballot to the polling place. You'd have to do what's called spoil that ballot, and then you'd be issued a regular ballot. The other option that sometimes states will offer is, let's say the person doesn't bring the spoiled ballot with them, the mail-in ballot that they don't want to use. What they would make the voter do in that case is vote what's called a provisional ballot. And that ballot doesn't necessarily count. What the election officials would do would be to double check to see that the person who said that they didn't get their mail-in ballot, for example, they would double check to see that that mail-in ballot wasn't received before they would count that provisional ballot that was voted in person. The election officials have come up with ways to make sure that people don't double vote.
Let's go to Art now, joining us from Milwaukee. Art, hi.
Hi, how are you doing?
Doing well. What was your experience?
Well, so I was in Central County in Milwaukee. I don't know how many of us there were, thousands, I think, who were working. So I was nominated by the Democratic Party to be part of the process, so they paired us up with the Republican in that case. I'm not a member of the Democratic Party, by the way, but I did vote for Biden, and I supported Bernie before that. So we went through one ward, almost 600 votes. We went through all the envelopes and make sure that the qualifications were okay, and then we opened them all up, and we didn't actually tally who they voted for. A machine did that, but we went through to make sure that there was only one ballot in each envelope and it corresponded, et cetera. And as I said, I was with a Republican designee, and we were, I thought, a very good, positive team. We agreed on everything, and in one case, he opened up an envelope, absentee envelope, and it had two ballots in it. So we went to the higher-ups and said, this doesn't seem right. They were both for Biden, by the way. So those were disqualified. They were actually not for the correct ward either. Someone got very confused, obviously. But other than that, everything was processed fine. And I have a friend of my, relative of mine in northern Wisconsin who has been emailing about how as soon as the Democrats get enough basically fake votes together, they will overtake Trump's lead and then declare victory. And that's simply not the way it is, and I have...
Well, I want to, Art, jump in here because we are short on time, and to thank you for explaining your role at Central Count in Milwaukee last night, John Greenbaum, Central Count, where absentee ballots in Milwaukee were coming in for that count. So sounding like, you know, John, that Art had a very systematic approach and that, you know, it was very straightforward.
Wisconsin's known for having a very well-run election process. It's actually one of the few states where you don't have somebody who's a partisan, who is elected politically, run the elections, but instead you have a bipartisan board do it. And I'm glad that Art had a good experience and can tell people what the counting process is like for absentee ballots.
So as we wrap up here, what are you following today?
So because of the nature of what I do, we'll be following up to see If anybody files lawsuits today or in the days that follow, and if we feel like we need to protect the rights of voters in that to make sure that their votes count, we may well get involved ourselves. So that would be number one. And then, I mean, we are going to go back through all the data and all the reports that we received during this election cycle, look at some trends. Also, as I mentioned before, look back to see whether there was any kind of coordinated effort, not by government officials or a political party, but by citizens to disrupt the vote, to see if what appeared to be isolated efforts were actually coordinated in some way.
John, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Kate.
John Greenbaum, Chief Counsel and Senior Deputy Director for the Lawyers Committee for Civil Rights Under Law. Coming up, we check in with the State Director of the Nonpartisan Voter Protection Group, All Voting is Local, with Election Day takeaways and what they're watching for next. That's after this news update. Stay with us on the Ideas Network. If you're just joining us, we're checking in with a nonpartisan voter advocacy group on the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Glad you could be here. As the pandemic surges in Wisconsin, we're taking stock of this historic moment for America's electoral process. About 1.9 million Wisconsinites had already voted headed into Election Day, marking the largest number of absentee ballots ever cast in a Wisconsin election. What are your takeaways from Election Day? What emotions did you feel? Were you energized? Were you apprehensive? Were you discouraged? Join in at 800-642-1234 to talk about it. Shantae Nelson is Wisconsin State Director for the nonpartisan group called All Voting is Local. Shantae, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thank you. Well, thank you for having me. I appreciate you all.
How do you think that Election Day went in Wisconsin?
Overall, we, of course, All Voting is Local is an organization where we work to eradicate barriers to the ballot box prior to Election Day. So we had done a lot of work between April and August and then August and November to really try to make sure that the election was accessible to all voters within Wisconsin. And overall, what we found was that the voting process ran more smoothly than maybe in times past. We did have some glitches throughout the state, some things that were isolated throughout the state that were able to be attended to almost in real time. And so that was helpful. And we just had, a really good turnout for in-person as well as absentee voting as well as day of.
Historic turnout. What do you make of that?
I make of it, basically, I say that this is a moment in a time where voters are seeing the need to be engaged. We've done a lot of All Voting is Local, as well as other partner groups, have done a lot to educate voters around the process of how voting impacts our everyday lived experience. And I think what people are starting to realize is that voting really is foundational to all things that we do and experience within society. And so as a result of that, what we found is that voter engagement has increased in such a way that it was absolutely electrifying.
You know, it's something that struck me the last time we talked was, you know, absentee ballots certainly playing a huge role in this election. But you said the power of casting a ballot in person is something that you personally feel as an African-American. And it really stayed with me. What did you make of in-person voting?
When I think about in-person voting, I think about the fact that Black people historically, and I'll just share this again to revamp, Black people historically have found pride in being able to participate in the voting process. Historically, we have been those whom have been willing to go into the actual polling location day of. And this particular situation being that we're in a pandemic challenge, many of or much of that foundation within the African American community. And we saw in this particular election scores of African Americans whom voted in person absentee, so like our early voting process. So maybe they did not vote on, you know, election day, but mm-hmm. there were scores of individuals whom voted in person early, as well as those whom voted by absentee ballot. And I of course, catered that to the fact that we're in a very serious health crisis right now as a nation. But I think at its core, it's been very encouraging to see the turnout, particularly in Black and Brown communities.
Is that turnout have to do with George Floyd? Does that turnout have to do with, you know, just grassroots efforts to tell people that your vote matters? What can you connect that to?
I think it's a combination. I think we are in a situation where Black and Brown people, particularly Black people, have been faced with the reality, a very stark reality, that unless we participate within this process, things will not change. And of course, it doesn't end with voting. It doesn't just stop with the voting process. We have to find ways to engage and to ensure that we are engaged beyond voting. However, voting, the grassroots effort has really encouraged Black voters, Brown voters, people whom are marginalized, voters whom are typically marginalized, to connect the power of voting, the power of being able to cast a ballot, to having a voice within a system that really wasn't set up in some ways to benefit that particular people.
Go ahead.
I was going to say, and so in this moment, what we see is we see voters being willing to speak up where they may have once been maybe afraid of the sound of their own voice.
Mm. We're talking with Shantae Nelson, state director for the voter advocacy group called All Voting is Local, and getting her analysis for how Election Day unfolded in Wisconsin. You can join in. Did you vote? How did it go? What was it like to cast your ballot and air your voice? Join in at 800-642-1234. Shantae, I want to look at a bit of a contrast here. There was a study by the Brennan Center for Justice that found that almost 10% of Black voters in Milwaukee were disenfranchised in the April primary election. Do you think anything like that occurred yesterday? I mean, we saw many more poll locations open.
Yes, we did see a lot of poll locations open. So All Voting is Local, as well as our partner groups, worked very diligently within the city of Milwaukee, particularly with the Milwaukee Election Commission, to ensure that we had a process. So when I say we work to eradicate barriers to the ballot box prior to Election Day, it is just that. Some of the ways that we've done that is we have worked very diligently to make sure that we were a very key partner in helping to recruit poll workers. One of the challenges in April, when we went down from our typical 180 voting locations to the five vote sites, what we found was that we didn't have enough poll workers whom could work that actual election. In this particular election, we helped to recruit double the amount that would be needed, almost double the amount that would be needed for working an election within the city of Milwaukee. So I think in that way, we really helped to make sure that voters were not, were basically enfranchised, and make sure that voters had access and a pathway to the ballot box.
What were lines like yesterday? What did you see in Milwaukee?
Milwaukee, the line, we had some lines in Milwaukee, but we had lines across the state. Mm-hmm. And I want to make sure that we convey that. One of the things that I am very adamant about is making sure that it doesn't become the narrative of Milwaukee versus the state. The state of Wisconsin had lines. We had lines in West Dallas. We had lines in Beloit. We had lines, throughout the state. Not just in Milwaukee or Milwaukee County. And there were other issues like tabulators that were, getting stuck or jammed throughout the state. However, one of the things that I've realized is this: we are in a situation where even in the midst of the lines, we monitored the election yesterday, we meaning AVIL and our partnering groups. And what we found is voters were enthusiastic about being in line. We found that voters were excited about the opportunity. Of course, the weather played a large part, right? But we found that voters were engaged and they were excited and they were willing to and eager to really participate in this process on Election Day.
I want to play a bit of tape for you. We heard from Angela Lang, the executive director of Black Leaders Organizing Communities, or BLOC, last night. Let's take a listen.
There were, unfortunately, an issue at one particular polling place where our election observers actually had the police called on them, not once, not twice, but four times. Saying that we were electioneering and we were not doing any of that. We wanted to make sure that we were passing out snacks, water, just kind of celebrating people voting as they were turning, as they were leaving the polling place.
So did you hear about this happening?
We heard not necessarily about that happening. We did hear about situations where individuals were in isolated moments or isolated sites, individuals were at the polling site and maybe causing some trouble. What we had in place, meaning AVIL, All Voting is Local, as well as many of our partnering groups, we had a very robust election protection field program happening at the same time. So we were able to dispatch lawyers or either legal observers to sites in those moments, in those situations in real time. Remember at the top of this particular conversation, I shared how there were things that happened, but they were able to be rectified within real time. And in some of these moments, we were able to dispatch individuals to basically aid not only the voters, but those whom were there to observe the voting process on site.
So you had the people to be able to clear up a situation literally in real time and not have to go back to a particular incident and revisit it and try to put together what happened.
Yes, in many instances, we run a field program, and of course, the National Election Protection Line 866 Our Vote. And as a result of that particular program, it helps us to be able to identify situations as they're happening in real time and be able to find a response to that situation in real time.
We're discussing Election Day, what happened with Shantae Nelson, the state director for the group All Voting is Local. Did you wait in lines or did you get right in? Did you register at the polls? How did that go? Did you have the correct ID? Did you observe someone else having difficulties in voting? What did you do? Bring your observations, your experience, 800-642-1234 this morning after. Email ideas at WPR.org. Back in a minute with Shantae Nelson here on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Let's get back to our conversation about Election Day, what transpired here in Wisconsin. Yesterday afternoon, dozens of Catholic nuns toured polling sites in Milwaukee and Detroit as part of a campaign to ensure every polling location was safe and accessible for voters. And according to the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, they traveled in cars painted with the slogan, "Every vote is sacred." Did you catch a glimpse of the nuns? Still time to talk, 800-642-1234. Shantae Nelson is state director for the nonpartisan voter advocacy group called All Voting is Local, and she stays with us for 10 more minutes. Shantae, I'm wondering how you thought the myvote.wi.gov went, how having access to your voting information online transpired in this election.
Yes, myvote.wi.gov, I should say, we have always voiced as a one-stop shop. We send voters to that site to find so many pieces of information. And even if we look at the way that it's set up currently compared to the way that it was set up pre-April's election, we find that there is so much more information for voters. We had an entire page just dedicated to voters being able to look up and track their ballot, which that was not something that was available prior to the April election. We had an entire page set up to how to request a ballot with videos and how to, you know, how to, what ID you need. So we had just resources that were available, and we really promote the site because it is a way that we can, it's almost like a cheat sheet for voters, if you will, if they are trying to find out what they need in order to cast a ballot without hindrance.
And, you know, I'm kind of chuckling to myself this morning as I visit the site, because right there plastered across the front of it is 2021 spring election is Tuesday, April 6th. I mean, the site never sleeps.
It never sleeps. Yeah.
You're always looking forward to that next election, and this one isn't signed, sealed, and delivered yet.
Yeah. That's why we send so many voters to it. It really is a great site.
You know, I'm wondering if there were reports of voters not getting their ballots on time or issues with those ballots not being received on time at polling sites. Did that seem to go okay? Because, you know, we had almost 2 million Wisconsinites vote early. This process hasn't happened before.
Well, yeah. So within the state, of course, we had a large turnout of absentee ballots. And one of the things that we were able to do almost immediately was to send voters, of course, to that particular site. One of the things that we found was because there were so many absentee ballots, and just when we look at, I live in Milwaukee County, and we had absentee ballot drop boxes throughout the county. And so we had processes where voters can drop their ballot into a drop box. We had processes where once that, you know, that 14 days before the election, voters could vote in person, and there were multiple ways that they could return their ballot in person, depending on the municipality, as well as being able to take their ballot to their clerk's office. And I think what we found was, there were voters whom were nervous. I mean, there were so many ballots that came in or that were returned, that were mailed out to voters and then returned back to the election clerk in such a short time. It did take some time for the track your ballot to be updated. And we had a couple calls from voters just asking about their, you know, how do they find out if their ballot has been received? And we were able to lead many of them to their election clerk to request that information. I myself was an individual where I cast my ballot. I had an absentee ballot, myself and my son, and I took our ballots to the early voting site on the first day of early voting within the city of Milwaukee. And it took a while for my ballot to show up.
On the tracker. Yeah.
But I was able to find that information and see that information eventually.
Shantae Nelson, state director for the voter advocacy group called All Voting is Local. She's our guide. We're getting her analysis of how Election Day went in Wisconsin amid a pandemic surge, amid a surge of absentee ballots. 800-642-1234 to join in with what you observed, what you experienced casting your ballot. Let's bring in Jim now in Freedom. Hi, Jim.
Hello. One thing I really observed through this whole election cycle is the lack of voice the media gave the other three candidates that were on the presidential election. How can we as taxpayers or voters decide if these other three guys might be better than the other choices we've seen if we don't even get a chance to hear what they are about and what they think? And what happened to me is I have a wife that's very strong in one area that she wanted to vote. And she gave me a book that was written by a Catholic guy because she's very Catholic. And as I read it, neither one of those candidates that were on the ballot fit what, as a Catholic, I should vote for. So just as I got done reading the book, my wife hands me my absentee ballot, and I look, and there's five guys on this ballot. And I looked at one of the guys, and he fit everything I wanted to vote for. I wouldn't even known it, except I had enough time to research him. But if I would have been at the ballots voting that day, I couldn't have done research to find out this is the guy I want to vote for.
Yeah, Jim, thank you for bringing it up. I want to give a shout out here to our program, The Morning Show, where we did have third party candidates on our program with their platforms, the ones who did want to accept an invitation to come on. But, you know, Jim is saying here, Shantae, that there are other choices on the ballot, and he wasn't able to clearly see what those choices were.
Yeah, so one of the, so of course we have the myvote.wi.gov. Another site that we have, which I think is very informative within the state of Wisconsin, is vote, V-O-T-E, 411.org. That particular site is a site that is managed by a very, I think, a very reasonable and, I guess reasonable is a good word for me to say, nonpartisan group that is, and that is the group is the League of Women Voters. So they manage that particular site, and they provide information on any candidate that will provide them with information. It is a site where voters can go to learn about who's on their ballot, learn about what those individuals stand for. So that was another site that we've also been sharing with voters to ensure that they are aware. And it's not just, you're not just locked into the candidates that are maybe at the forefront of the media.
And doing the homework there. So, Shantae, in the days ahead, are you anticipating legal fights? What are you watching for?
We are more so watching to ensure that basically voters' voices are heard. So we don't necessarily get involved in that way with legal fights. One of the things that we will be looking at are processes where maybe we've had provisional ballots and making sure that those voters are able to cast their provisional ballots and that they understand what's needed in order to cast that ballot. And so over the next couple of days, those are things that we will be looking for. We really turn our eyes and our focus to the voter to ensure that they are not limited. And in the process, if there are ways that we can support any voter, then we make sure that we do that.
How would voters need support at this point?
Some voters may have not necessarily known, or they've maybe casted a provisional ballot and may need additional information or just a prompting to not allow that ballot to just sit. Mm-hmm. And so that's a way that we can support that voter, is just really encouraging them. If you needed maybe you didn't have your photo ID, or maybe there was some other way where you needed to cast a provisional ballot, making sure that voter gets back to their municipal clerk and provide the municipal clerk with that information so that their ballot is cast.
Shantae, thank you for joining us.
Thank you all for having me.
Shantae Nelson is All Voting is Local's Wisconsin State Director. The Morning After Analysis on Election Day 2020 continues as we turn our attention to unpacking state election results. State election results next hour with WPR's own Capitol Bureau Chief Sean Johnson as our guide. What do you make of state election races and what you saw transpire? 800-642-1234 to join in on state races. This is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to the Ideas Network.